Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Whole Foods Market brings you meals worth sharing this holiday season. Visit WholeFoodsMarket.com/shop for our online menu and ordering system. Local turkeys, inspired sides, and even a little something for your hosts, all available online or in-store at one of our six Manhattan locations. Visit WholeFoodsMarket.com for more details.
Let's eat in. It's a gorgeous Monday, fall, crisp November. Doesn't feel like November though. And we're at Roberta's Pizza at Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Irway. And despite the lack of chill right now, it is time to start thinking about winter and all that good holiday cooking we got coming up. I wanted to talk a little bit about CSAs, because usually you think of CSAs signing up for it at the beginning of spring or before, but actually there are so many winter CSAs right now, and they're pretty various too. You can get a meat CSA, you can get an egg or milk share. There are plenty of vegetables, of course, but you got options here, and now is a good time to sign up before they begin. And I've got a guest here who runs the local root CSA. Wenjie Ying, thanks for coming. Hi.
Hi, everyone on TV Land.
So Wenjie has had an illustrious career in CSA. She started out as a CSA coordinator for Red Jacket Orchards, doing fruit shares, which was the first ever. So she's really a pioneer there. And now she pioneered her own CSA called Local Root CSA and has three locations. Brooklyn and Manhattan.
We actually have five locations.
Five locations, all around.
All around.
So they're calling now for winter CSA signups. And what can you expect from your winter CSA?
So the idea behind Local Roots NYC is to create CSA more convenient for people in New York City. So instead of having a 24-month commitment like most CSAs do, we break up the season between summer,
Did
fall.
You say 24 months?
I mean, 12 months.
Okay.
It's a long CSA. Summer, fall, winter. And we actually let our members sign up for any kind of share to join the CSA, whereas most CSAs, you have to join a vegetable share to join the CSA.
Yeah. So you have different packages you can create and customize.
Yeah. So for the winter share, we are featuring vegetable, fruit, meat shares, bread, egg, cheese, and grain shares.
What kind of local vegetables are around in the winter?
Well, ironically, because Rogowski Farmer, vegetable farmer, was hit so badly by the hurricane, they immediately just built some greenhouses and high tunnels at their farm. So in the winter time, instead of getting the root vegetables like you normally would, we're actually getting leafy greens like Swiss chard, kale, spinach from their high tunnels. So it'll be kind of
wow, way to spring back, like, yeah. Literally.
Yeah, they're amazing people up there. So
So creative. I'm so glad to hear that. It sounds like a good success story from Hurricane Irene under such horrible conditions up there, Rogowski Farm. Wow. So I'm going to hit you with some hard questions.
Okay.
Local Root CSA slightly differs from a lot of other CSAs. Wenjie created it. You're first. Mm-hmm. And it has these amazing options for the member, which is a great way to get new members, I'm sure. But also, there was a... And I'm going to quote a recent op-ed, I think, in Edible Manhattan, or Edible Queens, I believe, by Jackie Berger, who's the president of Just Food. Mm-hmm. And Just Food is, of course, a great nonprofit in New York City that has seen and engendered the great rise of CSAs from like one in 1995 to 100, or more than 100 now. So she would call your CSA an alternative CSA model.
Mm-hmm.
And the three, I think, main, or one of the points that she was saying, and we love Jackie, by the way. She's an amazing person.
Right. I actually used to be a Vista at Just Food. So I learned everything about CSA from Just Food.
Amazing. So she thought, she said in this piece that, for one thing, there's not as much, or there not necessarily has to be as much of a community commitment. So, you know, at most CSAs, you have to take a shift and help distribute it. It's kind of like a co-op or something in that way sense. So that's not always the case. I know it is the case for yours, and there's a lot of community events and hangouts that you do. And then, but the main thing is that there's not also this necessity of buying a huge upfront. So the beauty of how CSAs work is that you insure this farm, that no matter what happens throughout the season, thick and thin, this is what I'm paying right now, and let's experience it together, whatever the season holds.
Right.
So that's a wonderful thing for the farmer, because no matter what happens, they're insured that they have this money and they can continue on with their season. I would argue it's a great thing for the consumer too, because you get that learning experience of being deeply connected with the farm and growing and experiencing it. So, but you know, also it's maybe not maybe it's not a good thing for some people because it's not as convenient and you have to go with the flow.
You know, we actually base our CSA in the same model where our members sign up for the whole season, pay up front. And with that benefit, it's actually, you take the monetary value out of food, which I think is really great, because food, I mean, the value is beyond money. It's your health. It's what your life is revolved around.
Community, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Right. What was the question?
I don't know. I guess.
Oh, what the topic? Well,
so it sounds like you took the best parts of the CSA model and kind of just fashioned them to include various different farms, and that includes like a duck and eggs and dairy for you, which is something that a lot of CSAs do too. They have these optional shares.
And I actually think that this year is our first year, but it actually was very symbolic of what we believe in, because you know, our vegetable farmer was hit by this hurricane right before, like 3 days before our fall season was going to start,
and it was like now.
And we had this decision to make, like, what do we do, because we have to provide members with food because we're a new organization, but at the same time we want to support our farmer as much as possible. So I mean, I went up to the farm right after the hurricane and talked to Cheryl, the farmer, and I told her that no matter what happened, even though we're a new CSA with them, that we would stand by them no matter what. And, you know, we've done fundraisers for them. And CSA is interesting because there's no formal contract that is written up between members and the farmer saying that, like, what this relationship means. But I think there's a lot of trust and just the fact that people are members and want to support, I think, means a lot.
Right. I think that the risk here with some model or CSA models or CSA like models is that you could have a middleman situation where they're making a huge profit and just kind of chunking it for the consumer, repackaging it for the consumer. And, you know, that could probably happen. It probably does happen all the time.
We actually,
is that a CSA? I don't know.
I think I know about 80% of my members' names and what their occupations are and, you know, their life situation. And I also...
And how many members you got?
I'd say about like 200.
Oh, you have like a flock. That's so cute, MJ.
It's really great. And I also, on the same level, I know, I mean, all my farmers, I talk to them really frequently. Rogowski, the staff at Rask Farm, considers me part of the staff there, which is, it makes me feel really happy about.
Yeah, that's really cool. Are you crying a little bit?
No.
Okay.
But I am sitting really far from you.
Yeah.
So maybe.
So what have you seen has changed most drastically? Even in the past 5 years, we've seen an incredible rise. I'm not sure what the percentage is, but a huge spike, I guess, in CSA popularity. Do you see any other changes besides like what Jackie was saying? There's now people that are doing, you know, all different ways of CSA.
There, yeah. The The great thing is that when I talk about what I do, more than half people actually know what a CSA is, which is really amazing, which is nice because it's kind of a hard thing to explain. Yeah. And also, I mean, it's really great that a lot of meat farmers and cheese farmers also are trying to create their own CSAs, which I think is really wonderful because CSAs support farmers in general and should not be specific to like one kind of farmer, like a vegetable farmer.
Yeah.
And there's an overwhelming response that people prefer joining CSAs because it encourages them to eat healthy, and it's a direct educational resource of how your food grows and the seasonality of things.
Right on. Yeah. And what do you think you would like to, what are some roads that you might like to pave going forward? Like you have duck. I mean, you have incredible options here. Anything else? Like you're dying to honey? I don't know.
Oh, what products?
I don't know.
In the future, I mean, we just had a cheese and juice this season. So next year, I'm hoping to add milk and maybe syrup, and also like, I mean, there's a whole world of the whole idea of Local Roots is to bring your week's worth of groceries in one place from local producers.
So you can make we did this actually for our dinner, a duck cassoulet using some apple cider and
yeah, exactly.
We should come up with like recipe. We can work on that. That would be fun. Hand it out each week. You have to use that in this together. No.
It probably happens
though. That's the funniest thing.
Yeah. I mean, I actually, we try to provide recipes every week because that.
In the newsletter and stuff.
In the newsletter. And we also bring them to the distribution because that also encourages people to try different recipes and also to kind of expand their ideas of what to make with certain products. So I'll try to incorporate at least two or three items from the CSA in one recipe. And cool. A lot of them we actually get from your blog, Eating Out of New York.
Wow. I should make some more duck entries soon. and the other thing is like meat CSAs. There's a few. There's quite a few now. Mm-hmm. And of course, we've got Heritage Foods where you can always order really, really amazing heritage meats, but joining a meat CSA, there's something really cool about that to me. Might not be for everybody, but you get unique cuts from meats. You can usually say what you like and don't like, because you know if that's an issue, but up front. But I love the spontaneity of getting, you know, and it's such a value too. And we're gonna have all these like cold, lazy Sundays where you just want to make a stew. A beef, and it's you're not going to have to run to the store and spend an arm and a leg. Just spend an arm and a leg now. Take off your arm and leg.
And the best thing about pre-spending an arm and a leg on meat CSAs is that, you know, you can just pop that right in the freezer. And
pop what? Pop?
Just the meat. You can just put it right in the freezer if you can't finish it all that week. And you know, in 3 months, you'll still have food to eat.
You'll be the best party host ever.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm a commercial right now for CSAs, but I guess we are. That's okay. It's a good cause.
It's a good thing to advocate.
It is a good thing. So Wendy wanted to drill me next. We're going to cut to her song of choice, though. What'd you pick?
Oh, Nutrimilk Hotel.
Okay, we'll be right back.
Right into the
All right. That was Wenjie's song of choice in Chomuk Hotel, which is really ironic because you're allergic to dairy, right?
Yeah, I'm not really sure if he ever sings about dairy, though.
So, once again, it's Wenjie Yang from Local Roots CSA. We were just talking about how signups are right around the corner. Until when's the deadline?
Deadline is November 27th.
Mm-hmm. Right after Thanksgiving.
Right after Thanksgiving, yeah. So, you just came back from a really great trip.
I did.
To Taiwan?
I did.
Is that true?
I did, yes.
So what was, I guess, your motivation of going there? I know that you're half Taiwanese.
Mm-hmm.
Did you try any great food? Did you cook there? Did you only go to restaurants?
I got to cook there. I got to try foods. I got to eat at street stands and restaurants. And yeah, I was there for a while. It's 2.5 weeks or so.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an island. Thorny topic there, country.
Right.
About the size of New Jersey. So I traveled pretty much, you know, around it.
Mm. Did you have family there still?
I don't have family exactly. I have like half aunts. It's tricky, but no, I didn't have any family. I still have friends there, so I was good to catch up. And your family's from Taiwan too, correct?
Technically,
yes.
I guess I just learned this recently that in Chinese culture, where you're from is actually where your father is from.
What?
So my dad was born in Taiwan because his parents left China during the revolution.
Same with my grandparents on my mom's
side. Yeah, which I think is like the case with a lot of Chinese people.
And then they didn't consider themselves Taiwanese.
Yeah. So it's because my dad was born in Taiwan, but his father is from China. He says he's Chinese.
Exactly the same story as my mom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Really confusing.
Very confusing.
What am I?
And now you're an American.
Yeah.
No, this is actually something that... why are we talking about... Anyway. No, it's okay. It's a very good question because it comes up and I'm like, well, I think that I have friends now whose parents are in the same boat and they grew up in Taiwan and they now, this generation, if we were to be there, call themselves Taiwanese. Because, you know, it just happens. You're just there now. So but it's a different kind of Taiwanese, I guess. There's like levels of Taiwanese.
New age Taiwanese.
Yeah.
Newanese.
Yeah.
So do you feel like your Taiwanese background has really influenced your cooking? And do you feel like this trip to Taiwan, has it changed your viewpoint on food?
Absolutely. My Chinese, Asian, whatever you want to call it, cooking background definitely is so influential. It's where I learned how to cook most vegetables. And it's very different from, I think, that the way vegetables tend to be handled. And in all different aspects, like how you quickly cook meat by chopping into smaller pieces, that's just it's instinctual to me. Instead of roasting a big turkey, mm-hmm. like we're about to do in a couple weeks.
I've also noticed with a lot of the recipes that you create, it's the color, mm-hmm. which is also very similar to Chinese cooking where... The color in a meal is very important.
It's probably important here too now, when it's very helpful now to have that background, mm-hmm. because people want to have colorful food now. So
were there any food trends that you saw in Taiwan?
Well, basically what I was trying to do is compile what is Taiwanese food and in a really broad spectrum in a really fascinatingly diverse way, because you have, as we mentioned, the older generations of Taiwanese, and then you got different ethnicities like Hakka, and you got Aborigines who are even way, way older, and then you got like people who came from Sichuan province because that mm-hmm. was actually the last stand for Chiang Kai-shek's army. So there's some influence from there. What was your question?
Any food trends?
Oh, food trends. Yeah. It's amazing how trendy they are with food. Like pizza, like there's a trend. I don't think everyone likes it though. Maybe younger kids like it, and they like things with cheese in a really weird way. Like they top rice curry dishes sometimes with like a gratin of cheese, which sounds gross, but basically they're experimenting right now and they're looking into all different influences in food, which is pretty cool. And I'm sure there's a lot of hits. There's mm-hmm. some misses for me, but for them, everyone It's a totally different palette over there.
Yeah. Sustainability is so popular right now in New York City and America. Do you feel like that topic is talked about in Taiwan, or?
Really cool that you asked that, because I was wondering that myself. And on this trip, I learned hardcore that it was definitely alive and kicking. And it's not so much a young, hip thing at all, but it's like mothers and old ladies who care about chemicals possibly being in their food. You don't get a lot of jarred goods from China. They like made in Taiwan foods because of all these, you know, scares in recent years. They don't trust them. And there's now, I went to a few stores that are like no GMOs, no, you know, organic. They were all touting that. I went to an organic farm. It was great. We have an amazing guest too right here. Hey, this is a friend. While we're going off onto all sorts of topics, we might as well be joined by a food photographer and videographer. Bring over one of these guys. Throw on a set of headphones. It's Eric Wolfinger, and he's a photographer who shot, among other things, the Tartine Bread book, which is a really good book.
And you have very nice hair.
I worked on it all morning. That's why I'm late.
It's perfect. I can tell.
So what brings you to New York City, Eric? What are you working on?
Here to see friends. I got some meetings. Okay. And...
Okay.
Yeah.
This is actually interesting. I've always wondered, what is the secret to taking pictures of food if you don't have good lighting?
If you don't have the lighting? Ooh.
Like, say you're just in your apartment and you're an amateur food blogger.
Right.
I would tell you I don't shoot in non-daylight, natural light.
Yeah, I would say the secret is to take it somewhere where you do have good light.
The secret is not
find
to have
it.
A day job.
Right.
Well, that was Pete's major frustration in Taiwan, was like you guys were in like these indoor markets.
Yeah.
And he didn't have like the light.
My photographer buddy who came to Taiwan with me.
Yeah. Cool. And did a beautiful job. I mean, I've seen
good.
A lot of this stuff. The work looks great.
Can't wait to show everyone else. Yeah, he did a great job. But yeah,
lighting. Do you feel like food blogging is a thing in Taiwan right now?
I don't really know. I see that through, I can read it online here, so I didn't see people blogging like physically happen. But I do see, like, every time we turn on the TV in a hotel, half of the shows are about food. Like, food media is just like every day, and sometimes it's really wacky. Like, there's wacky hosts going on basically a scavenger hunt of Taipei, where you have to like eat this food at that stand, and it's like everybody's obsessed with food, or like cooking shows. So yeah, there's a lot of food media. So probably.
So what kind of cooking techniques have you taken back to America?
Ooh. Yeah. You know, one thing I was really fascinated with was I went to this tea growing region called Mekong, and there's a lot of tea farms. Taiwan makes really great tea, grows it, that is. And this area had a few restaurants that specialize in tea cuisine, which is like taking the ground tea leaves, or not ground, sorry, taking the whole dried tea leaves and grinding them up like in a coffee grinder, so kind of chunky, and then throwing them into dishes like fried rice, simple. And you get that kind of floral little touch. It looks like ground black pepper. So I thought that was really fascinating.
Have you used that technique?
Yeah. I probably should. Yeah, I brought some tea back, but... Yeah.
Like regular tea, toasted, ground, and like used to season food?
Yeah, but their tea is pretty special. So Taiwanese tea is like fermented and like aged. It's like usually an oolong type, whole leaf.
Yeah.
It's really yummy.
Yeah. When I was in Taiwan, I brought back like the 2010 harvest or the 2011 harvest or whatever it was.
Oh.
Like vacuum sealed bags. They're gorgeous tea, but
yeah,
I'll go home and toast it.
Totally.
And grind it.
So what were you doing in Taiwan?
I was traveling. I was visiting a friend, and we did like a little 8-day tour of the island, like a different city every day.
Yeah, you could do Taiwan in 8 days.
Really? My mom just asked me if I wanted to go to Taiwan for 10 days.
And you should say yes.
And I was like, that's too short.
Yeah, but you should also say yes. And then like.
Well, I was holding off so we could all go together.
Ah. You and Kathy?
No, all of us.
Oh, all right. I'll go back.
Yeah.
I'll definitely go back.
What struck you about the food that you encountered? Was it good? Was it bad?
It was amazing.
Okay, it was amazing.
I think what struck me was like kind of everywhere you go, you eat well.
Mm, yeah.
Like whether you're in Taroko Gorge in the middle of nowhere or like
so
in the city.
So it wasn't challenging to you, and I know you're a foodie. It wasn't, nothing was too weird.
Honestly, I guess I went and I was like, oh, I'm going to eat like rice for a week. I wonder how that's going to go, you know? Because I have such a crazy omnivore's diet in San Francisco. It's like one day it's pizza, one day it's Indian food and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt so good eating in Taiwan, morning, noon, and night. Yeah. Like the savory porridges for breakfast, the like incredible boba teas.
You like the congee. I find that that's a hard sell for
the what?
Congee for breakfast. Like a
that's like the
rice porridge.
Yeah, I love rice porridge.
Really? And Eric is not Taiwanese, by the way. So I'm just
clarify. I also like the rice porridge.
Mm-hmm. So I feel like there's certain things like when you sit down and like the Western people eat this and the non-Western people eat that, there's like a strict divide. I don't know. I'm trying to bridge
stinky tofu.
That.
I couldn't get my head or my
stinky tofu is tough.
My lips are stinky tofu.
Your nose around it.
Yeah, anything.
Stinky
around
tofu
it.
Is what the name is. It's tofu that stinks, but it tastes great.
I actually really want to find out how to make it and maybe appreciate it after making it. Because, you know, I like to get around the mystery of how something is done.
I looked at it like Taiwanese blue cheese. You know? Like you give you give somebody who's never had like molded cheese before, they're like, really? Mm. And then you just, over time, acquire a taste, and all of a sudden you want Roquefort. You want
blue
the stinkier, the better.
So, before you were talking about...
Oh, wait a minute. Can I wrap this up with my favorite question of the day?
Okay,
what is the ultimate, most amazing, ideal date meal anywhere on the planet? You make it or you don't make it?
Before I came here, I thought about this question because you always ask it.
Yes.
And last time I said duck,
yes,
so I
you
can't
did.
Say that again. So I'm going to go second.
Okay, Eric.
You have to go first.
Ultimate date meal.
Ultimate date meal?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. The ultimate date meal is you and your date are somewhere where neither of you know what's going on. You know, you don't know anything, and you and there's a market, and you like kind of go to the market, you like see some crazy things that you kind of have a sense of what to do with and don't really know what to do with it. And you like make a meal on your little camp stove.
Oh, that's amazing. That's a really good idea. Just go with the
I haven't quite had that date meal, but if I were to have like a perfect date meal, it would like be that, and then it would turn out like amazing.
Wow.
Like it would taste really good.
That is the true adventurous like spirit date meal. You go with the flow.
Lately I've been on a couple dates to Chinatown, and it's the best thing because you just go to different shops and just pick out different things from each shop.
And just in Manhattan's Chinatown?
And sit at the park and just eat it.
That could be like my that could
so
be
that
like
would
the,
be
the
your
date
meal,
that I just described.
Oh, we're
like,
going
like
to
scenes that I have no idea what's going on.
And
let's squash through Canal Street and try to be romantic. Sorry.
And it's nice for me because I can talk. I mean, they're all dishes that have kind of like nostalgic feeling for me.
Oh, so you're kind of like the guide on this date meal. I like
that. Oh, that's good.
Two very interesting experience-based date meals.
And
that's
Kathy,
good
what's
one
your
to
answer?
Add. Oh, you know, pizza probably. No, just kidding. I can't answer that. That's my question. But it is the last question of the day because it looks like that's all the time we have. So can we check you out at localrootscsa.org?
localrootsnyc.org.
NYC.org. And Eric Wolfinger?
Yeah.
.com?
EricWolfinger.com.
Check out his portfolio of gorgeous food photography and whatever he's up to next, which I guess I'll find out after the show. All right.
And Kathy can be found at noteatingoutinnewyork.com.
Thanks for the collaboration, guys. See you next week.
Thank you, Kathy.
I hear this sound.
following is a message from Heritage Foods USA. Join Heritage Foods USA this November. Reserve your heritage turkey today. Loved by all our chefs and customers for their unbeatable flavor. Visit www.heritagefoodsusa.com or call 718-389-0985 to order yours. That's 718-389-0985.